Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's going on? Welcome to the podcast. We had an amazing day today, starting with the interviews. Georgia Bulldogs head coach Kirby Smart came into the jungle for the very first time. Milwaukee Brewers masher Eric Thames told his amazing story. Plus, new Washington Huskies basketball coach Mike Hopkins was tremendous as well. The NBA playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and 420. A happy stoner Christmas to every last member of Team Bake. Alvy, roll it. OKC looked like they were in control. Looked like they had it. Russ was going crazy. They come from ahead to lose. 115 to 111. They're down 2 games to none. Bottom line, we saw it once again last night. It really does not matter how much Russ Westbrook dominates or how gaudy that stat line is. He cannot beat the Rockets all by himself. I mean, hell, he tried. It looked like he was going to for about three quarters. But the fact is, he can't. Somebody else is going to have to step up for them to have any chance. And that hasn't happened yet. And when Russ goes off the court, they go right into the tank, which is why he didn't get his customary rest in the fourth quarter last night. When the Monster Kid knows that they're garbage. God, I love that song.
Garbage.
When he knows they're garbage without Russ, that's why he leaves him out there. He likes to get him a rest in the fourth. But he couldn't afford to take him out last night because he knows that they're garbage without him and that nobody else is stepping up. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why Russ had such a tough fourth quarter. He'd never cop to it, but asking this guy to go 40 or near 4 or 48 or near 48 every single game is a hell of a lot to put on his shoulders and legs. And then he can't get the lift that he needs. He can't finish. And then the Rockets come from behind to rip it from the Thunder. Right when it looked like they were going to get the upper hand in that series. Because Russ can't do it all by himself. They can't expect this guy to play hero ball every single night is a way to get them out of the first round. Somebody else is going to have to step up. Stat, to help him out. But if they just want to stand around and watch him work, they ought to buy a ticket like the rest of us and watch the game. And no, this is not another example of why James Harden should be the MVP. Remember, these games do not impact the voting. The votes are already in. Now, the fact is, I can see people voting for either Westbrook or Harden. I mean, it really is that close. And it's not as simple as the Thunder didn't win, so Westbrook is no more valuable than Harden. A 50-point triple-double in a 4-point road playoff loss to a higher seed does not mean this guy's not an MVP, even if they lose. I mean, even if this guy had gone, say, 30, 13, and 10, it would have been a great playoff game, and they still lose by 20. So that's not what that's about. That guy had an amazing game last night, even if he couldn't finish in the fourth. And as far as that line goes, gaudy, gaudy line. But the last thing Westbrook is about is the line.
So how would you grade, when you look at your line on a box score, how would you grade the line?
I don't give a about the line. We lost.
I don't give a bleep about the line. We lost.
I don't give a about the line. We lost.
Man, how different would that series have looked? They were up. They were up big. They were up big, but he didn't get the rest he needed. He couldn't get it done in the fourth quarter. Nobody else picked him up. And now they're down 2 games to none. And they were in a position to rip it and couldn't get it done. We are joined by Georgia head coach Kirby Smart. Kirby, it's nice to have you on. How are you?
Appreciate it, Jim. Doing great, man. Excited to get on the show and visit with you guys a little bit.
Kirby, you too. It's good to have you on the show finally. Thanks so much. You're getting ready for your second spring game in charge of Georgia. Now that you've had a 4-year under your belt, how different do the spring practices feel to you? And then what kind of expectations do you have for Saturday?
Well, the spring practices are almost completely different. We've got a different team, a more senior-laden team, and it's been fun. We've had some really good competition. We've got a quarterback that's growing up kind of right in front of our eyes, and we're excited about that part of it. And then the expectations for Saturday, I want the kids to go out and have fun, man. They get to play in front of a big crowd and go out and compete. So that part I'm looking forward to.
Kirby Smart joining us. I'm going to ask you about that quarterback in a minute. And in some ways, it can be hard to quantify just how much a program has developed from year one to year two, and so you've actually seen it on the field against an opponent. But in the spring practices, are you starting to get a sense as to where this team is compared to the team at the same time last year?
Yeah, I definitely feel like offensively and defensively they're much more comfortable with the schemes. I think back to last spring, it was new to them, especially offensively. where defensively they had a little carryover from the previous coordinator to Coach Tucker. And now offensively it's like, oh, they're kind of getting it. You got guys in the second year in the program catching up to it. And that, a lot of that has to do with the fact that quarterback's in his second year in the system as well. So I definitely think we've advanced. We're able to do more things because they have a better foundation of the offense and defense.
Georgia head football coach Kirby Smart joining us. The GD Spring Day game is Saturday at 2 p.m. So the quarterback, we're talking about Jacob Eason. He's coming back. He's a sophomore now. And then you've got the arrival also, Kirby, of Jake Fromm, who's an extremely talented freshman. What do you make of how Eason has responded to Fromm's arrival?
Well, I think it's been great for Eason. I think he gets to learn from another guy who's done really well in high school, and he challenges him every day in the meeting room and every day on the field. I think any time you've got a guy talented beneath you, it burns a little fire in you and brings out a side of you that you don't get to see all the time. So that part's been good. The competition's been healthy. They both help each other, and they both done some good things, adjusting and moving around the pocket in the spring.
Of course, you got Nick Chubb right behind them, running back Nick Chubb. Coming back from knee injury last season, but how much better is he now that he's got another year removed from that injury? How's he look?
Well, you know, people asked me last fall and during the season if Nick was 100%. You know, I honestly answered that question and felt like he was. Watching him this spring, you know, it has to make you beg the question to say, well, he's a lot better now. I mean, he's lower to the ground. He's more confident in his cuts. He trusts everything. He doesn't have a knee brace on. I mean, that portion of him is changed. And he runs so hard and so physical. That's kind of his style of game. So I still don't know if he's 100%, but I know he's better off than he was.
Kirby Smart joining us. You know, taking that coaching job at Georgia meant that you were coming back to your alma mater. It's also your wife's alma mater. It's where you played your college ball. It's where you started your coaching career. So knowing all that, what was it like for you last year when you hit the field for your first official game as Georgia head coach?
Well, it was a great feeling. It was in the Georgia Dome in front of a lot of friends and family, and getting to play a great opponent like North Carolina, that was a great feeling. But it really felt good for the Bulldog Nation, because to me, that's what we're trying to do, is unite this group and have everybody on the same page and everybody pulling in the same direction. And we need the same thing going forward this fall, opening with a really good App State team at home. So that's what we're excited about.
Of course, the expectations are always going to be high at Georgia, but now that you're in your second season, you've got 10 starters coming back on defense, a top three recruiting class coming in, so of course, the expectations are even higher. So what are you doing with those as a coach and with your players? I mean, do you embrace the expectations, or maybe just try and shut them out and not focus on them?
Well, I think you can't avoid expectations in the coaching profession. I think our players are too social media savvy and too into all the accolades they get and things like that. It affects players. So for you to think that they're not going to know it, they know it. And we have our own expectations that whoever we go out and play, we want to dominate and be more physical and be tougher and out-compete them. We talk about not looking at the scoreboard all the time. So that's our goal, is to go out and try to punish our opponent. Hopefully we've got better football players and we got a deeper football team to go do those things with. And the outcomes that come, we want to get the most out of this team. That's the ultimate goal for us.
Kirby Smart joins us for a few more moments. You mentioned social media. I mean, this thing's a reality. It's going to be there. It's always going to be there. Are you more concerned about what your players might tweet or post, or are you more concerned about what they might read or what they might see?
You know, I trust most of our guys. I really worry more about what they read and see, how it affects their psyche and their self-talk. That always worries me, is what are they telling themselves when they see that hey, you may not be highly ranked. Okay, well, do I talk negative to myself, or do I use that as motivation, or vice versa? You're predicted to win the whatever. Somebody says you're the best team in the SEC. How does that affect your self-talk? I trust our guys as far as what they send out and do. They've been pretty smart about that, and every now and then we'll have a bonehead decision, but that doesn't bother me as much as what they read.
We're talking to Kirby Smart. You and South Carolina head coach Will Muschamp, of course, are friends. The story goes that he told you that he didn't think you'd be able to draw 40,000 fans for Saturday's game. Now, you had 93,000 last year. So what was your reaction when he said that, and then what kind of a crowd are you expecting?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm expecting a great turnout. We've got a great fan base here at UGA, and what an awesome opportunity for some of our fans that may not be able to afford a regular season ticket. They get to come for free. So you get a chance to bring your kids and your family over for a game. I think any time you can do that, it's an awesome feeling. And as far as Coach Muschamp goes, I think he's concerned with South Carolina and not concerned with us.
Clones, I need this minute to talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, Stamps saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman will pick it up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now back to the Daily Jungle. Looky here. Guess who lit the lamp 5 times? Guess who went into Toronto and ripped back the home ice and that series? And guess who's going home to the nation's capital with all kinds of mojo after taking the Leafs' very best shot and still tying up that series at 2 games apiece. Who? The Caps, baby. The Caps. And I couldn't care less how that looked or how scrappy the gritty little Leafs are. A win is a win, and the Caps are back in control. Not that they weren't ever not in control. Not even when Toronto punked them in OT to take a 2-1 lead. I never said they were in trouble. You all did. Because for whatever reason, many of you want me to be wrong. You're rooting for me to be wrong, for whatever reason. And for whatever reason, I never am. Not when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Not last year, not the year before, or the year before that, or ever. And not now. Hey, clones, what did I tell you? You may have been worried when the Caps nearly blew another 2-goal lead. After blowing 2 the game before, but not me, not Barry Trotz, not his crew, not when TJ Oshie found the back of the net twice, not when Ovechkin sniped his 3rd of the series, and not when tough guy Tom Wilson did it again, 2 more G-notes, all while skating on the 3rd line. That's how deep they are. That's how good they are. That's how much talent they have. That's how much firepower is there. That's how mentally tough they are. And they're still figuring things out, making some tweaks, and refining the machine. They know. They're not getting overhyped. They're not getting overconfident. They're not going to the tank again. They've got this. Yeah, I know. I know what used to happen back in the day, but this is different. They're different. And in a way, this is the kind of challenge that these guys needed. A young team playing with house money, taking their very best shot at the President's Trophy winner. And they took that best shot. Nobody said it would be easy. It's a war of attrition. And when the Caps close this thing out, 2 of the next 3 are at home, where Washington won more games than any other team in the NHL this season, then they'll have the first round under their belt. Then they'll be well on their way. Who, me? Panic? What? Me? Panic? Not an ounce of panic. And they're just getting started. C-A-P-S, Caps, Caps, Caps. Eric Thames is my guest. Eric, it is great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Man, I'm great. It's great to talk to you, Eric. In fact, there are so many things you and I can get into, from Ric Flair to the power of now to the way you're mashing. But Eric, give me 1 second. To fully appreciate what you're doing right now, we got to go back. You were a 7th-round draft pick by Toronto. You worked your way up through their system. You showed some power, but then they send you to Seattle and then Baltimore. Then you're waived by Baltimore. Then you go to Houston. Ultimately, you end up asking them to release you. So let me start there, Eric. At that point, what were you thinking about your future in Major League Baseball?
Well, yeah, it was, I would say 2013 was definitely a very frustrating year, you know, being optioned down to Tacoma, and I felt like I did well in April and May, And I never got a phone call to get called back up. So I just kind of hit the tanks mentally. You know, I just got over it. You know what? I'm done with this. I'm going to start pursuing a career in wrestling maybe. And all of a sudden, like, out of nowhere, you know, a team in Korea, the NC Dinos, they called my agent. And they said, hey, you know, I feel like had to play for us. And I told my agent, I said, no way. Like, I'm not going to go to Asia. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to play. And he convinced me, hey, man, just go. So play 4 years, see what happens, see how it feels, and I didn't. That just changed everything for me.
I was going to say, so when the opportunity first came up to go to Korea, that was your initial reaction, no way, I'm not doing that. But your agent kind of talks to you about that, he starts to work on you, and then you decide to go there. So when you first showed up, what was it like?
It was different, man. I mean, it's crazy. Like, especially so me, like, I'm single, you know, I was out there alone by myself, so, you know, I couldn't speak the language. The city of Masan is, like, it's kind of in the country. So, you know, it's not like Seoul. There aren't many English speakers there. So I couldn't talk to anybody. Like, I had no idea where to eat. I mean, you know, like, so I was eating, like coffee pastries and danishes for dinner and stuff like that. So I started to learn how to, like, you know, find out where meat restaurants were and Korean barbecue restaurants. So it was tough, man. But, I mean, that's life. You know, you have to adapt, you know.
Eric Thames joining us. That's amazing, really. You had to find meat restaurants instead of pastry restaurants. But, dude, you did adapt, and you acclimate, and then you start putting up huge numbers, and you're rocking these incredible metallic gold elbow guards and shin guards. Then you have a line of watches, and then you get the nickname God. So once you get comfortable and you start doing what you do, what was it like being Eric Thames in Korea?
I would say it was difficult because, you know, I'm a very private person. You know, I like to, you know, just hang out at the house, play video games, watch movies, you know, eat, you know, I'm usually always alone. So when I was over there, there was no privacy. I mean, I could be at dinner with my mom, or I could be doing anything. There'd always be a constant stream of fans, you know. Like, my first and second year, it was okay. But after the MVP, man, it was just like, I don't care what city I was in. I could be in a hole in the wall bar, restaurant. It didn't matter. Like, people would always recognize me. And even though, like, that's truly a blessing, but, yeah, I mean, as you can tell, like, there's some nights, you know, you go 0-4 with, like, 4 punch-outs, you just want to be alone. And all of a sudden, like, people want pictures and autographs, and it's like, hey, you know, all right, whatever, but it was all right.
Yeah, I could see where that would be tough. You know how it is. Like, maybe you want to eat dinner just once in a while. You just want to eat dinner and maybe get through dinner without somebody bothering you. That's one thing. But there's this story about how you were out on a date once and you were actually kind of, you know, getting kind of amorous, kissing your date. Did some fan tap you on the shoulder in the middle of that and ask you for an autograph? And if so, what was your reaction?
Yes, an autograph and a picture. And I was like, no, dude, like, are you kidding me? Like, great. You can't do that. You can't do that to somebody. It's one thing if I'm, like, sitting alone eating a McDonald's cheeseburger, but, like, I'm, like, lip-locked. Like, come on, man. And, you know, he was just like, oh, I'm sorry. And it's like, whatever, dude, the damage is done, you know?
oh, I'm sorry. Can you just sign this, and can we just take this picture anyway? Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
Eric Thames joining us. Is it also true, is there an actual smoke break during games in Korea? And then how does that work? I mean, are guys just lighting up on the field?
No. I mean, I would say Korea is just like, you know, like the States. You know, here, you know, obviously tobacco is a big thing throughout the world. But like, smokeless is big here, but over there it's like cigarette. So, like, in the fifth, like, between the fifth and sixth inning, they'll be like, yeah, 5-10-minute break. And, you know, like, all the guys on the bench will usually go out to the outfield and stretch and stuff like that. So, like, the coaches, umpires, other players will go in, you know, to, like, certain areas on the field, and, like, they'll smoke real quick and then go back on the field and play.
Well, that's different. I mean, did you pick up that habit while you were there?
No, I'm not. No.
Good, man.
I don't smoke.
Good. Good. Eric Thames joining us. So you're coming up through the minors, and there was never any doubt about your power, right? You may not have been as disciplined, as patient at the plate as you need to be. So when you get to Korea, you start a system where every time you chase a pitch, you'd put a dollar into a pot, and at the end of the season, you'd donate all the money. How did that improve your plate discipline?
It's actually crazy. Like, when you start to be mindful that you're doing stuff like that, like, it completely changes everything. So for me, like, I know, like, people now are saying that, like, oh, like, I'm, taking stuff or doing stuff for like my power, but it's not that. It's just a matter of like play discipline. You know, like if you swing at strikes, it increases your odds of hitting the ball hard. It, you know, if you're chasing balls out of the zone, now you're completely just like removing all that. So my first few months in Korea, like, you know, they throw a lot of fastballs and forkballs and like E-fist curveballs and like cutters and sliders and like a lot of this stuff. But the forkball is like a really tough pitch to hit because, you know, it's pretty much like a split finger, but it doesn't kind of drop as much. And so I chased a lot of those in the dirt, and I'm like, dude, like, I need to stop chasing this pitch. Like, I'm hitting like 260, like, doing nothing. You know, I'm going to get sent home if I don't do better. So I just kind of like, you know, locked it down. I kind of like focused like on my training routine, on like seeing pitches and stuff like that, and I made adjustments, and so I brought those adjustments here, and it's working so far, you know.
Yeah, it is. Eric Thames joining us. It's working great so far. I love that notion too that they're throwing you forkballs. I used a great word though. You said if you're mindful. I know away from the field, you're a big reader. Like, what kind of books are you into, and what kind of an impact have they had on you?
I try to keep. I don't want to say like self-help, but more like, you know, like mental toughness, or more like the Eastern philosophy. You know, I'm a big fan of Eckhart Tolle. You know, I just love books like that because even though like a lot of the principles, like, you know, I'm familiar with already, but kind of like just reiterating to yourself in your mind to kind of keep that mentality. I mean, baseball is a big sport about routine and, you know, being in control of your habits. And so if you keep having like a habit, like mentally, whether you're talking down to yourself or, you know, if I keep swinging at this pitch in the zone, okay, well, stop swinging at it, and B, like, start picturing in your mind, like, you not swinging at that pitch. So if a guy keeps throwing you changeups down the way and you keep chasing it, then imagine a changeup higher and just keep, like, constantly just going through that in your mind. Get your mind to, like, it's just kind of weird, like, saying this stuff, but yeah, it's like crazy. Like, the mind is like a slave to like your thoughts. So if your thoughts and like your visualization, your mental routine, your mind will eventually follow it. It's crazy.
Eric Thames joining us. Eric, one last thought. So when you're doing as well as you are there, all of a sudden you have opportunities back here, and you have lots of opportunities. And one of the ones came up was the Brewers, of course. Quote, this is what you said. I came to Milwaukee. Before I signed, I checked it out. And after an hour, I knew it was where I wanted to be. I love the Midwest. I love the hospitality of the people. Milwaukee's got great beer. I love beer. End of quote. You know, it's kind of a funny note. But bottom line, is that really all it took was 1 hour? How did you know Milwaukee was the place?
You know, I have a thing for, like, you know, like the smaller market teams and cities. Because, like, the fans are just, like, They're so like open armed, you know, like the fans here love their Brewers. I mean, you could just tell, like, I mean, at a game, even if the team's doing bad, like the team's fans are still cheering, and, you know, I love that. You know, it's not like, you know, if we're losing the third inning, like all of a sudden the fans are booing us. It's like, no, it's like, you know, you see the kids, they're all excited to watch Bernie slide down the slide, and I mean, it's awesome. And then, like, I know friends that have played for the Brewers, and they had great things to say about the city as well, and, like, this great food here. And I was like, you know what, like, let's do it. Let's just do it. Let's see what happens. And so far, I mean, I feel like the team's doing really well, and, you know, I love it here, so I'm excited for when the weather warms up, you know?
Yeah, I see you working there, too. And you love beer. I mean, we all love
beer.
Yeah,
and I love beer, yes.
Mike Hopkins is my guest. Mike, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
How are you doing?
Man, I'm great. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Mike, it's a great story. I want to talk to you about this, and I've been anxious to do so, but you had been preparing to be a head coach for quite some time. What have the first few weeks on the job been like for you?
Well, I've been shot out of a cannon, to be honest with you. And, you know, when I got the job, the kids were on spring break. You know, you're trying to, you know, manage, kids want their releases, who's going to be on the team, recruits want to know, what's going on. So just a lot of time on the phone working. But it's all been exciting, liberating in a way. You know, it's like that you're really, really tired, but it's the good tired where you're excited to do what you do. So, but getting my family situated, all those things, that you never really take into account. Kind of are thrown out at you all at once.
No question about it. Mike Hopkins joining us. There's so many different things going on that are non-basketball related. Then you've got to come in and get your staff together, keep the players you have, try to keep them. I mean, a million things. But at your introductory press conference, you were asked why you took this job when you were the head coach and waiting at Syracuse. And I love the response. You said, quote, are you married? You remember that first time you met your wife? This felt right. I can't explain it. It's a great comparison. So what was it about this opportunity that felt right to you?
Well, I'm originally a West Coast guy. I went to Modern Day High School, Southern California, and very familiar with, you know, the Pac-12 conference at the University of Washington. My father actually went there for 2 years. And it just, you know, when you're going through it, I've always had the dream of having my own program. You know, I remember, you know, just watching that 30 for 30 with John Calipari. You know, I was on the team when they beat us to go to the Sweet 16, and you saw this guy go to UMass and turn into a national power during the time. And, you know, I was, as a coach, you always, you know, with an underdog spirit, you're sitting there going, geez, how cool is that? Or what some of these coaches have done and had their own build. And so, you know, part of that, and I talked to my agent, and I said, you know, we've always talked about different jobs and what it would take. And I said it was like the people, the place, and the potential. And when University of Washington came up, he asked me, you know, and it took me about a second. And you go through it in your head and you start talking about, you know, the talent in the backyard. The home arena is incredible. They've got a great following. It's a great university, one of the top academic institutions. The league is incredible. Three teams. This year I have a chance to win a national championship. And so that was that second phase. And then I met Jennifer Cohen, the AD, and we spoke. And that was the kind of the kicker, because her vision for the program, where she wanted it to be, what she was looking for, it just aligned. And it was just that, like I said, like meeting your wife, it just felt right. And, you know, going back to building or protecting, and I decided I wanted to build something.
Mm. Going back to building and protecting or building. That's really interesting. Mike Hopkins joining us. So, Mike, you think about that, and it feels right, and you want to take that shot. I mean, nothing's guaranteed, but you feel like it's a really good shot to take, and you want to build something, but still you've got to go tell Jim Boeheim what you're doing. What was it like when you told him that you were leaving, given the connection you had to him and how long the two of you had been together?
Well, the one thing is, you know what, he was so supportive, and he was incredible. He didn't – you know, I came – we had lost to Ole Miss. And, you know, the night before, I had made a decision. I didn't want it to be a negotiation or be talked out of it, because I knew in my heart that it was the right thing to do. And so the night before the Ole Miss game, I had signed on to be the head coach at University of Washington. And so that next game against Ole Miss, you know, I knew no one else knew other than my wife and I and the people at Washington and my agent. And I was going through that, and there's so many incredible memories. And, you know, people were asking me, like, what's the matter? We lost the game, and I went back into the stalls and tried to hold my composure and just took some time away, and then called Coach, and I said, you know, can we meet? And he said, yeah, Mike, come on over. So I went up to him, and I told him, and he was like, no way. He kind of had that.
Right.
You know, I wish I could do my Jim Boeheim impressionation, like, no way, you know, with his face, but he was so happy for me and, you know, gave me a big hug and talked about the job and, you know, what I should do. And, you know, like that father figure, you know, that relationship of all those years. And, you know, I think he was really, really proud. You know, obviously it was, you know, we've been together for so long. So there's that sad part, but there's also that excitement part. And he was really, really excited for me and proud of me.
You go from modern day to Syracuse and you're playing with guys like Sherman Douglas, and then you work your way up to being a starter and then the captain. But then after your time there, you said that you, quote, got fired 19 times in the CBA and overseas. So what did you think your life was going to be like at that point?
Well, my life at that point was, oh my gosh, every minute that I woke up was about basketball, basketball, basketball. And it was so bad, Jim, that my father had a company and he had a bad year financially and he couldn't hire me. So it was this, your dad couldn't hire you. I couldn't, you know, I was done playing hoops. And I don't know if you remember the great Marv Marinovich.
Sure, of course.
I would grow up with Todd. They took me in and he said, listen, do you want to give kids individual lessons? And that's when I fell in love with coaching. I gave sixth grade kids individual lessons, and there was power in helping somebody develop and become better. And it's funny how my life has, you know, circled around and I've gotten to this point. And so I always believed that I was born to do this. I was meant to be in this position right now. And by the way, as a kid, modern day, growing up and listening to your show with my brother, like, you're one of the greatest. So this is an honor to even be on this show right now.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Incredible. Southern California. I'm so blessed to have this opportunity to talk to you and be the head coach of the University of Washington.
So I know you bake. I know you bake, and you know that I don't bake. We know this about each other. I know you bake. You know that I don't bake. Yet still, what was the biggest question when I got back from my December run to Jamaica? What was it? Rome, did you bake? Rome, how many bowls did you rip with Janet in Jamaica? Rome, are you still high from your vacation? And I had to tell you then, I'll say it again right now, I never once reached for the Panama Red. The only red that I reached for were the ice-cold red stripes on the beach. I know you bake. You know I don't. But the jungle is a judgment-free zone. Always has been, always will be. And Team Bake has, in fact, been good to me. So I can be good to you. The times, they are a-changin'. Not only are states, coast to coast, legalizing the lettuce, the tree, even professional sports leagues are taking a closer look at the benefits of bud. Weed is becoming more and more mainstream. Again, I'm not an advocate per se, but I'm not saying that I don't have an open mind to it. I'm just saying it's not my deal. It's not my thing. It's not what I do. So with all that said, I know where you stand, you know where I stand. Let me do the right thing then and extend a very happy holiday greeting to all of the following. Let me wish you a very merry stoner Christmas. The apostles of Afro Man, the blazers of blunts, the connoisseurs of Kron, the deacons of Dro, the eaters of edibles, the fanatics of 420, the gangsters of ganja, the homies of hippie lettuce, the inhalers of indica, the jump men of joints, the kings of kush, the leechers of lighters, monsters of munchies, notaries of nugs, obliterators of Oreos, partakers of peace pipes, quellers of quarter pounders, roasters of roaches, smokers of spliffs, tokers of trees, underachievers of urban areas, villains of vaporizers, wizards of wacky tobacco, yodelers of yawning man, and zealots of zigzags. A happy 420 to all of you. Again, not where I live, not what I do, not my thing. But I know it's yours, at least some of you. And if you're hot boxing the jungle today, and you think you can responsibly grab a vine without hurting yourself or somebody else, I've got one for you then. Team Bake. I'll do it. This is your bat signal. And let me say it real slow for you so you don't forget. Get out your crayon, write this down, and I'll be very slow. 1, 8. Let me start over. 1. Let me start over. 1-800-636-8686. Hey, if I'm wrong.
Warning.
And today actually is any different for you than all the other days, you just let me know. Now that I've sent that bat signal out, where's Lisa in Tucson? The most famous bakette in the jungle. Where is she? Lisa, I literally am calling out to you. I'm shouting out to you, Lisa, because when I think of the Kron, I think of you. Of all the famous stoners in the world, of all the famous people who bake, I think of Snoop, and I think of you. Lisa, where are you? Where are you? 1-800-636-8686. 636-8686. A very merry stoner Christmas, heads. Not my deal, but you go ahead and do what you do. And the times, they are changing. The world is changing. What to do? Where to go? Take a break? Talk to a stoner? Or this guy? Man, those phone lines are lighting up like a Christmas tree. Team Bake is at it. Wow. This email says, I smoke two joints before I smoke a joint, and then I smoke two more. That's all it says. Hey, bro, are you too high to sign your email? Hey, look, I'm not in any way trying to glorify this. Although I'm not trying to denigrate it either. I'm just recognizing what today is. And that there is a Team Bake. Because I get a lot of tweets from Team Bake. At 512 Lumber tweets, that is exactly how I learned the alphabet. Hashtag Team Bake. At Emo Steve tweets, with the Baker's alphabet at Jim Rome, unreal. At This Is Misfit tweets, blaze one for the nation. I don't. I haven't. Probably in 30 years. Literally. Now, you know me. I'll slam an adult beverage tomorrow night. But this is a non-judgment zone. I'm not here to judge. At Jay Quarterson tweets, I hope someone tries calling 1-818-11-800-866-6686. Me too, head. Here in Cali, Matt, let's go to the phones. Open phones right now. Matt in California. Matt, what's going on?
Mr. Jim Rome, long time, two times. Since the drug test days.
Hey, Matt, could you pass one right now? If I were to drop a drug test on you, could you pass one right now?
In about 15 minutes with one trip to the GNC, probably I could pass it.
Okay. All right. Good. What's going on? How's your day going?
Yeah. Day's going fantastic, Rome. You know, woke up with no alarm clock. Didn't have one of those. Didn't need it. Had breakfast where I wanted it. Went right to the big, we might call it a stash, but it's a big bin of something that I like to do. And I pull that off the tree and I break it up in big handfuls, and then that's what I do. Right now, I am rifling through my kids' Easter basket. Both my kids.
That's incredible.
Just the good stuff, though. Just the, like, jelly beans and some caramel things.
Right, so how do you explain that? When they come home and they're looking for that Easter basket and there's nothing in it, and they're like, Dad, did you get high and eat all my candy? What's your response going to be?
Rome, I do what any good Catholic man would do. I look them dead in the face and I lie. I say, I have no idea where your candy is, kids, and then I go to confession.
Is there any dope that's good enough to make Peeps taste good?
No, but my wife, I'm going to sell her out right now, Rome. She does love Peeps. They are her favorite. They're like my worst candy ever. They're like black licorice. They're terrible.
Do you guys bake together?
Occasionally. Wife's down for whatever. She's like probably Miss Rome Janet. She likes to be part of the team, the team that we got.
I like
that. You call the team to rally, Rome, and I know we're rallying. I love the Patrick Ewing reset. We rolled a lot. We smoked a lot. We makes a lot, we spend a lot. Dynamite logic there, Pat. The holiday take was so funny about every holiday being the same, except for Cron holiday, which is exactly the same as every other day. Todos los días, if you speak Spanish, and that's a shout-out in Lakerland. I was dying laughing at your acrostic limerick, Rome, with the letter association. It was funny as hell. You asked for a take. It's basketball, Cavs, Warriors, collision course, and I am out.
My man. I mean, am I going to tell that guy not to bake? How good was that? Sherry in San Francisco. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
What's up, Rome? How's it going?
Sherry, what's going on?
I'm so excited. I loved your last segment, and I know you're calling out for Sarah, but I have to represent for the lady clone heads here. This weekend's my birthday. I'm kicking it off right today. I'm going to Hippie Hill in Golden Gate Park. The crowds are already accumulating, and I'm just so excited to sit out in the sun and celebrate the day.
Key in L.A., Key, what's up?
What's up, man?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Out here stoned on my way up to Portland. It's my birthday today. Happy 420.
Bro, are you driving?
Yeah, I'm riding.
Are you riding or are you driving? Are you doing the driving or are you riding?
No, I'm riding.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. All right, so you're going to drive. Yeah. You're driving to Portland.
Yeah, what's that?
You're driving to Portland.
Yes.
Happy birthday,
I am.
Bro. Happy birthday, man. How's your day going?
Thank you. Not bad. Not bad at all. It's one of the greatest days of all. And, you know, I just wanted to let you know, you were saying that you don't partake and, you know, it's just a day that we all, you know, it's a day that we do something that we do every day. I wanted to let you know that it is actually a day for the people who don't do it every day to join in with the people who do it every day.
So that's interesting. So in other words, it's not really your day since you do it every day, but it's really our day, the people who don't do it. The 420 is for us.
Just like Christmas is for everyone, 420 is for everyone to join in.
Got it. Dan in Denver. Hey, Dan, are you celebrating the Stoner Christmas?
I am not. And tell Key I'm going to pass. I'm going to go off the board here for a second, Rum. The Warriors scored 110 last night. As long as this team keeps putting up Steph Curry's weight and points, the Warriors can't be stopped. Can you believe how skinny that guy is, though? He looks like he could use a Cheerio as a wedding ring. That's not a mouth guard he's gnawing on. It's a chew toy. His parents must be still trying to get him off the binky. Next press conference, his daughter's going to pick him up and put him on the table. And I heard Luke in Fort Collins was on hold, checking in from the watch list. This poor chump got put in Rome's friend zone, and he doesn't even realize it. Rome, you notice that none of these guys calling with their weed takes or doctors or lawyers or on their way to the office? Half these stoners don't have a car, let alone a career. You saw he was driving or riding, not driving. The only family they know is either Indica or Sativa. But Rome, I'm not going to go too hard on Team Bake on their holiday. We've all burned before in junior high. So I'll just say this. Luke, you aren't going to rip a golden ticket as long as your number one priority is ripping your bong. War random drug tests on 421. Let me know when I can start growing my smack off beard out, Rome. Out.
Let you know when you can start growing your smack off beard out, Rome. You know what, Dan? You can start growing that smack off beard right now. Give him a golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket.
I just did.
I got a golden
yes, I
ticket.
Did. Hey, Twitter, go ahead and break yourself. Hey, clones, was that or was that not awesome? Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. Now do what you do. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, trust the podcast, and check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. See you then.